well used at remembrance time. Psalm 23, very familiar to all of us. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now, as we are coming towards the silence at 11 o'clock, I started doing a little bit of research on the people linked with the church who are on these plaques, and thanks also to Jenny, who's also found things out. The First World War, there were 62 people associated with this church who served in the war. They're on that roll of honour, which was in the vestry. It was given to us last year by the local history society, who had had it for some reason for a long time, but they've now given it back. And this is normally kept in the vestry, but it's there. 62 names of men who left their homes, didn't know when they were going to come back. And on the plaque in the wall there, you have 8 people linked with the church who died in the First World War and 1 person in the Second World War. What seems to have happened, a lot of these were at the Sunday school. Some may have moved away later on, but they still maintained their links with the church. We'll talk about some of them in the next few minutes. Right at the top is George Bartlett. George was born up at Joyce Green. In the 1911 census, he was a coal hewer. Obviously worked at one of the collieries further up the valley, and he was 18. And he lived at a place called Telephone House at Upper Lidbrook, which was obviously next to the telephone exchange. And he had his brother, his mother and his sister. The mother was a widow, and she was the caretaker of the telephone exchange. And his sister was a telephone operator working next door. George was a good musician. And in 1913, the local paper said he was an accompanist at a concert party held in the church. He was providing the music. And it looks like that just before he joined up, he was a commercial traveller, left the colliery. And he joined the Grenadier Guards, and he was a private. But in October 1916, he was seriously wounded after only being at the front in Flanders for a week, and he died a few days later. And he's buried in a cemetery at a place called Etaples in France. The next one down is Sidney Fluck. His actual name, full name was Sidney George Fluck. He was born at Ruadeen about 1881. And in the 1891 census, he was living with his parents, two brothers and two sisters, at a place called Waters Cross, which is on the Ross Road by the Vention Lane going up to the Royal Spring. He was there. It seems he left school to work as a stable boy. In 1897, he joined the Royal Navy, and he was on various ships as an able seaman. And then in March 1915, as he was preparing to go and sail away in the Navy, he was at HMS Pembroke, which is a shore establishment at Chatham. And then he was aged 33, and just before he was due to set sail, he died of meningitis. He was married, he had two daughters, and when he died, one was 18 months and one was 4 months. And he's buried in Gillingham in Kent. He had a brother called Albert, and Albert died in 1957, and he's buried in the graveyard behind us. Victor Creed. In 1911, he was 16. He was living with his parents, two brothers and one sister at a place called Moorwood Coppice, which is on Vention Lane. His father worked at the tin plate works just down the road here. And he later moved to Church Hill. He was married but didn't have any children. He was a private in the Gloucestershire Regiment. And he served all the way through the war, and after the war he was in Catterick Barracks in North Yorkshire when he died, aged 24. And he got malaria and Blackwater fever. And he's buried in the parish church here in Lidbrook. George Hussey is the next one. He was born in Lidbrook. And in 1911, he was living in one of the cottages next to the church here, Chapel Row. And he worked at the tin works. And he was known as a roll catcher, whichever one of that was. And he was 28. And he was 1911. He was married with two sons. He was a bit of a lad, because the local paper says that in 1912 he was prosecuted for stealing an umbrella from a local pub as a joke, but the person that he was stolen from it didn't like that and told the police, and so this young lad was fined. Like a lot of people from this area, they had family in Wales, and quite a few people would move from Wales to Lidbrook, Lidbrook to Wales, and he moved to Pengham near Blackwood, and he joined the Welsh Regiment and became a Lance Corporal. We don't actually know where he served, but he was obviously severely wounded and was invalided back. And in 1917, he died of his wounds in a hospital in Lambeth in London. And he is also buried at the parish church. And his brother Oliver died in 1951 and is buried in the graveyard here. Samuel Fletcher, full name Samuel Enoch Fletcher. His family was also originally Welsh, from Pontypridd. And in 1901, in the census day, he was living at Cinderford with his parents, four brothers and three sisters. He was a tin plate worker. He must have travelled down from Cinderford here. But he then moved to New Road in Upper Lidbrook. And his parents were there in 1911. In the census then. But his father died in 1912. And his mother seems to have been an invalid. Samuel married a lady called Alice Robbins. And they lived in Lidbrook until about 1900. So he would have been linked with the Sunday school until about then. They then moved to Aberdare and finally to Ystradgynlais. And he worked again in a tin plate works. And he had three sons and three daughters. Now Samuel was an active member of St John's Ambulance. And he was called up in August of 1915. He was a private in the Royal Army Medical Corps. He died in December 1915 at Aldershot. He was 47 and he was going to France, to the front. But he got a very bad attack of asthma and he died. And he was buried in our graveyard on Boxing Day in 1915. And he was obviously very well respected. His funeral procession was headed by the brass band of the Trafalgar Colliery. And his gravestone says, "Safe in the arms of Jesus." I don't know much about what happened to his family after that, but his wife remarried in Ystradgynlais in about 1922. And it looks as though his family, his children, continued to live in Wales. I'll tell you about the other ones in a few minutes, but let's stand. With proud thanksgiving, a mother for her children, England mourns for her dead across the sea. Flesh of her flesh they were, spirit of her spirit, fallen in the cause of the free. Solemn the drums thrill, death august and royal, sings sorrow up in two immortal spheres. There is music in the midst of desolation, and a glory that shines upon our tears. They went with songs to the battle, they were young, straight of limb, true of eye, steady and aglow. They were staunch to the end against odds uncounted. They fell with their faces to the foe. They shall not grow old as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them. I'd like to take a seat and I'll continue talking about some of the people who are up there. A young man called Harold Toombs. We don't actually know a lot about him, but in 1911 he lived at a place called Bayhead Cottage at Hangerbury, which apparently is somewhere around where the Orchard Trust cottages is at the bottom. In 1911 he was aged 12 and he was at school. His dad was a steamroller foreman and his mother worked in a shop, and he had three brothers and three sisters, and he was the youngest son. He was a gunner in the Royal Garrison Artillery, and he died of wounds in May 1917. And he's buried at Burgry in France. Oliver Hale. Oliver was born at Blakeney, but they moved to Lidbrook when his father was working in the pit at Trafalgar. And they lived first of all at Church Hill, and then they went up to Joy's Green and lived at a farm there. And he was, in the 1911 census, living with his brother and family. His brother was the farmer. Oliver was not somebody really that you'd have been very fond of. He was in trouble with the police quite a lot. 1907, he'd be about 15. And he was fined for letting off fireworks a couple of weeks after bonfire night. But in 1912 and 1913, he appears in the paper probably half a dozen times, when he was fined, beginning at 10 shillings and going up to a pound, for being drunk and disorderly, using obscene language, refusing to go leave pubs when he was told to. And I think possibly because he was shamed his family, he and his parents moved out to near Merthyr. But in 1914, he was with the Herefordshire Regiment and then transferred to the Royal Welsh Fusiliers. And in October 1918, a month before Armistice Day, he was killed in action, and he was again buried in France. But he's remembered because of his links, because he would have been at the Sunday school here. Arthur Watkins. 1901, they lived at Worrell Hill, and he was four then. His parents was a miner. Again, he will have been in the pit just up the road there. And he had five brothers and two sisters. And they then moved to the Rhondda, 1903. And in 1911, he was a coal hewer, age 14. So he was working in the pit when he was 14. But his father, his three brothers and a sister were all recorded as being born in Lidbrook. And Arthur was a Lance Sergeant in the Gloucestershire Regiment. And he was killed in action in March 1918 at Arras in France. And his name appears on the Arras Monument. There is one person linked with a church who died in the Second World War, and that's Ralph Woodhouse. His full name was Ralph John Eddiston Woodhouse, Eddiston with his mother's maiden name. And in 1913, there was something rather like a census. There was a register of all the people that lived in the country. And he was a wire picker, and he worked at the cable works at Stowfield, and they lived at Corner House in Lidbrook, which I think is right down at the bottom, with his father. His father was a mine examiner, and a brother, and he had his mother and brother. Ralph was a gunner with the Royal Artillery Anti-Tank Regiment and with the East Surrey Regiment. He was killed on the 28th of May 1940 at Dunkirk. His name appears on the Dunkirk Memorial and also on the War Memorial in the middle of Gloucester. And it's rather sad to hear that his name was on a list of the missing. that the Red Cross sent round all the prisoner of war camps in Germany to see if there was anybody there. So you can only assume that his remains were never found. But we do know he died at Dunkirk. And the sadness there that his mother and father must have felt, you can see from the plaque that they put up. His father Arthur died in 1963 and his mother Winifred in 67. And they only had one other son, Arthur, and he died in 1968, and they're all buried in the graveyard. All people that when you look on the plaque there, you just see a name. But these were people who lived and loved and were loved in this area. Human beings are by nature forgetful. We've got to have a calendar next to our kitchen door on which we've got appointments, visits by children, birthdays and anniversaries. And without that, I would be absolutely lost. Because I'm reminded such and such a thing happening. I didn't know that. It's on the calendar. You need reminding. I think like quite a lot of us, I take medication. And a number of tablets as I rattle as I walk. And quite often I forgot whether I've taken my tablets in the morning. And I was saying this to the nurse at the surgery, and she said, well, do something so that your mind links with your tablets. And so I decide what I do is I wouldn't put my watch on in the morning until I've taken my tablets. That rang a bell. So that I know if I put my watch on, I immediately think, have I taken my tablets? And sometimes it's extremely useful. But we even forget events and people who were once important to us. I have forgotten my wedding anniversary twice. But one of them, Kath also forgot, so that didn't count. But we were saying the other day, weren't we? We can't remember people's names that meant things to us. And what was the name of that person who did such and such or lived there or lived next door? We can't remember. And often we need objects to remind us of people and events. I think, certainly before the advent of the mobile phones, we all have albums of photographs of family and holidays and things. We like looking at them because we forget what the children were like. I know if you're like us, our eldest daughter, we had dozens and dozens of photographs. By the time we got to number four, she says, you don't have any photographs of me. I have a box of documents of things going way back. They don't mean anything to anybody else, but they do to me. And they remind me of things. And see if I can find it. A youth hostel card. When I was in my teens, I used to love going youth hosteling. And I go up to the Yorkshire Dales. And this one, it has 1967, lots of stamps there. And one of the things, when I look at that, I remember something that happened. And it had to do with custard. And I was at a youth hostel in the Dales, and there was this group of French school children who were on a trip, and they were youth hosteling. And the thing that I can remember was that when the evening meal came, we're not sure about these sausages, but when the puddings came, treacle sponge, oh, du custard, oh, je l'aime du custard. Custard, they love custard, they'd never had it before, but they wanted custard whenever they were there. So that, something that reminds me, and it takes me right back. When I first started work, I was put in this office, and there were a lot of very presumptuous people there, took themselves far too seriously, and they all had, in their little cubicles, they all had degree certificates. I thought, well, I'm not going to do that. So I found a certificate that I did put up. And it was when I was 9, I got a certificate of merit in English, and I put that up as an implied criticism. And then by the end of the year, they'd taken their degree certificates out. And I thought it was good. So that reminds me of something that happened. And it wouldn't have meant anything to anybody else, but it did to me. And when I look at that, that takes me back many years. And these objects and things do make our memories fresh, because we need to be reminded of things that happened. We're wearing poppies. We've got poppies here, we've got poppies all over, and thanks Jenny for putting lots of poppies up. The poppies were very familiar to the soldiers in Flanders, because they were like weeds throughout the whole area. They would see the red poppies growing. They would have been very familiar, and that's really why, after the First World War, the poppy was used as a symbol of remembrance, because they were so familiar to the people in the trenches then. And we see, in these last few years, a lot of black silhouettes put up about of where soldiers lived. Some people think they're very creepy, but I think it's so poignant that otherwise we would forget. But it does link a person with the area they lived in. And we need to be remembered, because if we didn't have the plaques, or we didn't have the roll of honour there, these people were being forgotten. Their parents have died, their brothers and sisters have died. Quite possibly their nieces and nephews have died. And they would be forgotten if it wasn't for that. Jenny and I wouldn't have had the impetus to go and find out a bit about each one. And when these were first put up, the people that would have known them would have been in the area. Oh yes, I can remember Samuel, I can remember Sydney, I can remember Victor. And for some whose parents and brothers and sisters attended this church, it would be a poignant reminder. And their grief would have been very raw. But as time went on, the memories would have faded, and eventually all those who knew them would have died. But these plaques testify to the reality of what they did, and who they were, and also the pain and the grief of their loved ones. And it's right, I feel, to be reminded of those, of what happened to them, and how what they did actually contributed to the nation that we have now. Just think what would have happened if the Germans had won in either of the world wars. And the terror that would have come to this country, and the oppression. And so Remembrance Sunday reminds us, takes us right back to what happened and what it cost people. Now, communion is also an act of remembrance. And this is why we're having communion today. Jesus says, "Do this in remembrance of me." And the Christian church, in lots of different formats, have been following that command for 2,000 years. Oh, it might have different names. It might be different ceremonies. And sometimes you find that the history of the church in past centuries is that the ceremony really takes over from the meaning. We probably know it. So the Reformation came and really changed things and said, well, you know, you need to think about what the meaning of communion is rather than the person doing it or the format. Because as in John's Gospel, God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. God calls us to remember. In Revelation, they had a few harsh things to say about some of the churches. Well, some good things, but some harsh things as well. And the church at Sardis, he wrote, "I haven't found your deeds complete in the sight of my God. Remember, therefore, what you have received." So he's telling them to remember. But amongst the calls to remember, have you ever thought that God forgets? Not that he's forgetful like we are, but he actually forgets. It's a deliberate forgetting. He says, "I will remember their wickedness no more. I will remember their sins no more. I will forgive their wickedness." And when we come to communion, we are remembering Jesus and what he did. But we're also acknowledging that when we have trusted in Jesus, the promise of God is he's going to forget all the wrong things we've done. Now, some of you know that I'm pretty fond of John Newton. John was also a bit of a lad, but he would have put Oliver Hale to shame. He had quite a few things happen in his life that would have given him pause for thought. Apparently he was badly thrown from a horse and almost killed. And he used to go boating with his friends, and several of them were drowned. And he said, These things happened to me, but all too often I forgot. And then we do know his story of how he joined the Navy, but deserted and was caught and punished. And he had the reputation of being the biggest swearer in the Navy, which takes a lot. And then he got involved in the slave trade. And then how in the middle of a terrible hurricane, he had a special experience of Jesus. And it changed his life completely, and he became a great opponent of the slave trade. He became a minister. Now John, as he came towards the end of his life, he had what we would call dementia, and his memory was going. And he said, "My memory is nearly gone," he said. "But I remember two things. One, that I'm a great sinner, and Christ is a great saviour." So we come now to take communion. Jesus says,